Why is she being so obstinate about his generous offer? It's because he's done so much for her already. She trots beside him along the quay, trying to ignore the scandalized voice of her mother that rings in her head. He is not your husband. He is not your husband. She shakes her head. Enough! She's not going to let her absent mother make her feel guilty. She is in England now. She's free, like an English girl, like her grandmother. And Mr. Maxim said that she is on holiday, and if it gives him pleasure, after the pleasure he's given her, how can she refuse? She blushes, recalling his, what did he call it? Early morning wake-up call. Alessia fights back her smile. He could wake her up like that any day. And he cooked her breakfast again. He is spoiling her. She hasn't been spoiled in a very long time. Ever. She glances up at him as they walk into the center of Padstow, and her heart lurches. He looks down at her, his eyes lively and his handsome face erupts into a wide grin. He looks roguish this morning. It must be the stubble on his face. She likes the feel of it beneath her tongue. She loves the feel of it against her skin. Alessia! She had no idea she could be so wanton. Mr. Maxim has woken a monster. She laughs to herself. Who knew? Her thoughts take a somber turn. What is she going to do when they go back to London and the holiday comes to an end? She wraps one hand around his biceps and squeezes his hand with the other. She doesn't want to think about that. Not now, not today. This is a holiday. As they walk, the words became her mantra. This is a holiday.
Grish Pushim.
Padstow is bigger than Trevethick, but the old cramped houses and narrow lanes are the same. It's a picturesque little town. The place is bustling with people, tourists and locals out enjoying the sunshine in spite of the cold. There are children eating ice cream, young people holding hands like Maxim and her, and older people happily arm in arm. Alessia is amazed that people can express their affection so freely on the streets. It is not the same in Cucas.
I turn into the first shop that sells women's clothing. It's a local chain store, and I stand in the middle of the shop staring at all that's on offer. Everything looks pleasant enough, but frankly, I'm a little overwhelmed. Alessia is hanging on my arm like a limpet, and I have no idea where to start. I'd had the vague idea that I'd have her cooperation, her enthusiasm even, but she doesn't seem interested in the merchandise. A young sales assistant approaches us. Blonde and breezy, with a bright girl-next-door smile and a bouncing ponytail to match. She asks, "Can I help you, sir?" "My, girlfriend needs everything. She's left all her stuff in London and we're here for a week." "Girlfriend?" "Yes, that works." Alessia looks up at me, surprised. "Sure. What do you need?" The assistant asks with a cheery glance at Alessia. Alessia shrugs. "Let's start with jeans," I interject. "What size?" "I do not know," Alessia replies. The assistant looks puzzled and then stands back, appraising her. "You're not from around here, are you?" she says pleasantly. "No," Alessia flushes. "I think you're a small, either a UK size 8 or a 10. She gives us an expectant look, waiting for confirmation. Alessia nods, though I think it's because she doesn't want to be rude. "Why don't you go into the changing room and I'll find some jeans in those sizes and we'll go from there?" "Okay," Alessia mumbles, and with an inscrutable look at me, she follows the assistant to the changing rooms. I hear the assistant inform Alessia, "My name's Sarah, by the way." I breathe a sigh of relief and watch Sarah retrieve a couple of pairs of jeans from the shelves. "Dark and light denim and a pair in black," I prompt. Her ponytail bobs merrily as she flashes me a smile and gathers several pairs. Wandering around the shop, I rifle through some clothes racks trying to decide what would look good on Alessia. I've been shopping with women before, but they've always known what they wanted. I'm dragged along on these trips either to pay or to give an opinion that will be ignored. The women I know all have confidence in their own style. I wonder if I should send her shopping with Caroline. What? Back in London? No, that's probably not a good idea. Not yet. I frown. What am I doing? I'm fucking my daily. That's what I'm doing. In my mind, I hear her cry as she orgasms. My dick hardens at the memory. Bugger. Yes, I'm fucking her and I want to do it again. That's why I'm here. I like her. Really like her. And I want to protect her from all the shit she's endured. And I have so much and she has nothing. I snort. It's a redistribution of wealth. Yes, how altruistic and socialist of me. My mother would not be thrilled. That thought makes me smile. I find a couple of dresses I like, one in black and one in emerald green, and hand them to the assistant. Will Alessia like these? I sit down in a convenient chair outside the dressing room area and wait, trying to put aside my disquieting thoughts. Alessia appears wearing the green dress. Wow. I feel a little lightheaded. I've never seen her in a dress. Her hair cascades down below her breasts, which are swathed in a soft fabric that clings everywhere. Breasts, flat stomach, hips. The dress stops short at her knees and she's barefoot. She looks sensational. A little older maybe, but more womanly and sophisticated. It is not too low? Alessia asks, tugging at the neckline. No. My voice is hoarse and I cough to clear it. No, it's fine. Do you like it? Yes. Yes, I like it a lot. You look lovely. She gives me a shy smile. I hold up my finger and motion for her to turn around. She does quickly and giggles. The fabric clings to her ass too. Yep, she's gorgeous. I approve, I say, and she heads back into the dressing room.
45 minutes later, Alessia has a new wardrobe. 3 pairs of jeans, 4 long-sleeve tops in various colors, 2 skirts, 2 plain shirts, 2 cardigans, 2 dresses, 2 sweaters, a coat, socks, tights, and underwear. That's £1,355, please. Sarah beams at Maxim. What? Alessia squeaks. Maxim hands over his credit card, pulls Alessia into his arms, and kisses her long and hard. She is breathless when he releases her, and she stares down at the floor, mortified. She cannot face Sarah. In Alessia's town, holding hands in public is considered forward. Kissing? No, never. Never in public. Hey, Maxim murmurs, putting his hand beneath her chin to pull her face up. You spend too much, she whispers. Not for you. Please, don't be angry with me.
Her gaze lingers on my face, but I have no idea what she's thinking. Thank you, she says finally. You are most welcome, I reply, relieved. Now we're going to get you some decent shoes. Alessia's face lights up like a summer's day. Ah, shoes. The way to every woman's heart. In a nearby shoe shop, she chooses a pair of stout ankle boots in black. You'll need more than 1 pair of shoes, I say. These are all I need. Here, these are nice. I hold up a pair of ballet flats. I wish they stocked high-heeled fuck-me shoes, but alas, everything in the store is practical. Alessia hesitates. I like these, I say, hoping my opinion will influence her decision. Okay, if you like them, they are nice. I grin. And I like these. I hold up a brown leather knee-high boot with a heel. Maxim, Alessia objects. Please? She gives me a reluctant smile. Okay.
We can leave your boots for recycling here, Maxim says as they stand at the sales counter. Alessia looks down at the new boots she's wearing and then at her old pair. They are all she has left of her clothes from home.
I would like to keep them, she says.
Why?
They are from Albania.
Oh, he looks surprised. Well, perhaps we can get them resold.
Resold? What is this?
Repaired. The bottom of the shoe replaced. Understand?
Yes, yes, she replies, excited. Resold.
She watches as Maxim hands over his credit card once more. How can she ever repay him? One day she'll earn enough money to pay him back. In the meantime, she has to think of something she could do for him.
Remember, I want to cook, she says.
This is one way. Today, Maxim asks as he picks up her bags.
Yes, I want to cook for you, to say thank you, tonight.
Okay, let's take these bags back to the car and we can shop for food after we've had some lunch. They dump the bags in the small trunk of the car, and as they walk hand in hand to a restaurant, Alessia tries not to dwell on Maxim's generosity. It is rude in her culture to reject a gift, but she knows what her father would call her if he knew what she was doing. He would either kill her or have a heart attack. Probably both. She's already dishonored him, and until recently she had the bruises to prove it. Once again, she wishes he were more open-minded and less violent.
Baba. Her mood nosedives.
We lunch at Rick Stein's cafe. Alessia's quiet, and when we order our food, she's a little subdued. I wonder if it's because I've spent money on her clothes. Once the waitress has taken our order, I reach over and take Alessia's hand, giving it a reassuring squeeze. Alessia, don't worry about the money. For the clothes, please. She gives me a tight smile and takes a sip of her sparkling water. What's wrong? She shakes her head. Tell me, I insist. She shakes her head again, turning away to stare out the window. Something is off. Shit. Have I upset her? Alessia? She turns back to face me, and she looks distraught. Fuck. What is it? She gazes at me, dark eyes clouded with misery, and it's like a knife to my gut. Tell me. I cannot pretend I am on holiday, she says softly. You buy me all these things, and I can never pay you the money. And I don't know what will happen to me when we go back to London. And I am thinking about my father and what he would do to me. She pauses and swallows. And to you, if he knew what we had done. I know what he would call me. And I'm tired. I'm tired of being afraid. Her voice is a raw whisper, and tears shine in her eyes. She looks directly at me. That is what I am thinking. I stare back, paralyzed but empty and aching for her. That's a lot to think about, I murmur. The waitress returns with our food and cheerily places my Californian chicken sandwich in front of me and the butternut squash soup in front of Alessia. Everything okay? She asks. Yes, fine, thanks, I say, dismissing her. Alessia picks up her spoon and stirs her soup while I'm helpless and floundering for something to say. Her voice barely audible, she says, I am not your problem, Maxim. I never said you were. That is not what I mean. I know what you mean, Alessia. Whatever happens between us, I want to be sure you're okay. She gives me a sad smile. I am grateful. Thank you. Her response angers me. I don't want her gratitude. I think she's got some old-fashioned notion about being my mistress. And what her father has to do with us, I don't know. It's 2019, not 1819. What the hell does she want? Fuck. What do I want? I watch as she lifts her soup spoon to her lips, her face pale and sad. At least she's eating. What do I want? From her? I've had her beautiful body. And it's not enough. It hits me, like a sledgehammer, right between the eyes. I want her heart. Fuck. Chapter 17. Love. Confusing. Irrational. Frustrating. Exhilarating. This is what it feels like. I am madly, crazily, ridiculously in love with the woman sitting opposite me. My daily, Alessia DiMarchi. I felt like this since I first laid eyes on her standing in my hallway clutching a broom. I remember how disconcerted I was, how angry, how the walls closed in on me and I had to escape because I didn't understand the depth of my feelings. This is what I was running from. I thought I was just wildly attracted to her, but no. It's not just her body I crave. It's never been just that. I'm drawn to her in a way I've never been to any other woman. I love her. That's why I went after her when she fled to Brentford. That's why I brought her here. I want to protect her. I want her happy. I want her with me. Fuck. It's a revelation. And she has no idea who I am or what I do. And I know so little about her. In fact, I have no idea how she feels about me. Yet she's here with me, so surely that means something. I think she likes me. But then again, what choice does she have? I'm her only option. She was afraid and she had nowhere to run. And on some level, I knew that. And I tried to stay away from her, but I couldn't. Because she's carved her way into my heart. I've fallen in love with my cleaner. Well, this is a fine fucking mess. And now she's finally opening up to me. But in spite of all I've done, she's still afraid. I've not done enough. My appetite evaporates.
I'm sorry. I did not want to be the killbuzz,
she says, interrupting my thoughts. Killbuzz? She frowns.
My English?
I think you mean buzzkill. Her smile is half-hearted. You're not, I reassure her. We'll figure this out, Alessia. You'll see. She nods, but she doesn't look convinced.
You are not hungry?
I eye my chicken sandwich and my stomach rumbles. She giggles, and it's the most wonderful sound in the world. That's better. I delight in her amusement, relieved that she's recovered her sense of humor, and I turn my attention back to my meal.
Alessia relaxes. She can't remember talking about her feelings to him before, and he doesn't seem angry with her. When he glances at her, his eyes are warm, his expression reassuring.
We'll figure this out, Alessia. You'll see.
She looks down at her butternut squash soup, her appetite returning. She marvels at the chain of events that has brought her here. When her mother put her into the minibus on the freezing back road in Kukës, she knew that her life would change beyond all recognition. She had such hope for a new life in England. She didn't expect the journey to be so hard or so dangerous. And the irony was that she had been trying to run from danger. And yet it brought her to him.
Mr. Maxim.
He of the handsome face and easy laugh and brilliant smile. She watches him as he eats. He has impeccable table manners. He's neat and tidy and chews with his mouth closed. Her English grandmother, who was a stickler for manners, would have approved. When he looks across at her, his eyes are a luminous green, the most extraordinary color, the color of the Drin, the color of her home. She could watch him all day. He gives her a reassuring smile.
Okay,
he asks. Alessia nods. She loves the warmth of his smile when he looks at her, and she loves the heat in his eyes when he wants her. She blushes and looks down at her soup. She never expected to fall in love.
Love is for fools, her mother used to say.
Maybe she is a fool, but she loves him, and she's told him, but of course he doesn't understand her native tongue. "Hey," he says. She looks up. He's eaten his food. "How's your soup?"
"It is good."
"Well, eat up. I'd like to get you home."
"Okay," she says,
and she likes the idea of home. She'd like to make her home with him, permanently, but she knows it's not possible.
A girl can dream.
The drive back to Trevethick is more muted than their earlier journey. Maxim is preoccupied and listening to strange music playing over the sound system. Their stop at a supermarket called Tesco on the way out of Padstow has yielded all the ingredients Alessia needs to make tovkosi, her father's favorite dish. She hopes Maxim will like it. She gazes out at the passing countryside. Still cloaked in winter, the landscape reminds her of home. Though here the trees are cropped short and warped by the bitter Cornish wind. She wonders how Magda and Mikael are getting on in Brentford. It's Sunday, so Mikael will probably be doing his school homework or online gaming, and Magda will be cooking or talking to her fiancé Logan via Skype. Or maybe she's packing for their move to Canada. Alessia hopes they are safe. She glances at Maxim, who seems lost in his own thoughts. He would know how Magda and Mikael are if he's been in touch with his friend. Maybe he'll let her use his phone later, and she can catch up with the news from home. No, Brentford is not her home. She doesn't know where her next home will be. Determined to keep her spirits up, she lets go of that thought and listens once more to the extraordinary sounds coming from the sound system. The colors are clashing, purples, reds, turquoise. It's like nothing she's heard before.
"What is this music?" she asks. "It's from the soundtrack of Arrival."
"Arrival?"
"The film."
"Oh.
Have you seen it?"
"No."
"It's great. A real headfuck. About time and language and the difficulties of communication. We can watch it at home. Do you like the music?"
"Yes. It's strange, expressive, and colorful." His smile is brief. Too brief. He has been brooding. She wonders if he's dwelling on their earlier conversation. She has to know.
"Are you angry with me?"
"No, of course not. Why would I be angry with you?" She shrugs.
"I don't know, you are quiet.
You've given me a lot to think about."
"I am sorry."
"There's no need to apologize. You haven't done anything wrong. If anything..." He trails off.
"You have not done anything wrong," she says.
"I'm glad you think that." He gives her a quick, sincere smile that dispels her doubts.
"Is there any food you don't eat?" she asks, and wishes she'd found out before they went shopping.
"No, I eat pretty much anything. I went to boarding school," he answers, as if this explains his entire ethos on food. But Alessia's knowledge of boarding school is limited to Enid Blyton's Mallory Towers, a favorite book series of her grandmother.
"Did you like it?" she asks.
"First one, no. I was expelled. The second one, yes. It's a good school. I made good friends there."
"You met them?"
"Oh, yes." Alessia blushes as she remembers the two men in their underwear. They settle into an easier conversation, and by the time they arrive home, she's more cheerful.
We carry the bags into the house, and while Alessia unpacks the groceries, I take her clothes upstairs. I put them in the spare bedroom, then change my mind and place the bags in the walk-in wardrobe in my room. I want her in here, with me. It's presumptuous. Fuck. I'm tangling myself in knots. I don't know how to behave with her. Sitting down on the bed, I put my head in my hands. Did I have a game plan before we got here? No. I was thinking with my dick. And now, well, I hope I'm thinking with my head and following my heart. During the drive home, I contemplated what to do. Should I tell her that I love her? Should I not? She's given me no indication of how she feels about me, but then she's reticent about most things. She's here with me. That means something, surely. She could have stayed with her friend, but that would have meant those gangsters returning and finding her. My blood turns to ice. I shudder to think what they would do to her if they did. No, I was her only option. She has nothing. How could she go on the run? Yet she arrived in the UK with nothing and she survived. She's resourceful, but at what cost to herself? The thought weighs heavily on me. What did she do during the time between her arrival and finding Magda? The anguish in her eyes in the restaurant, it was affecting. I'm tired of being afraid. I wonder how long she's felt this way. Since she got here? I don't even know how long she's been in the UK. There's so much I don't know about her. But I want her to be happy. Think what to do. First, we have to make her legal here. And I have no idea how to do that. My solicitors should know the answer. I can only imagine Raja's face when I tell him I'm harboring an illegal immigrant. Her grandmother was English, maybe that will help. Fuck, I don't know. What else could I do? I could marry her. What? Marriage? I laugh out loud because the idea is so absurd. Why not? It would freak my mother out. For that reason alone, it's worth popping the question. Tom's words from our night at the pub come back to me. You know, now that you're the Earl, you'll need to provide an heir and a spare. I could make Alessia my countess. My heart starts hammering. That would be a bold move, and maybe a little sudden. I don't even know if she has feelings for me. I could ask her. I roll my eyes. I'm going round and round in circles. The truth is, I need to find out more about her. How can I ask her to be my wife? I know where Albania is on the map, but that's about it. Well, I can put that right now. I drag my phone out of my pocket and open Google. It's dark when my phone starts to complain about its remaining battery life. I'm sprawled across the bed, reading everything I can about Albania. It's a fascinating place, part modern, part ancient, with a turbulent history. I found Alessia's hometown. It's in the northeast, nestled among mountain ranges and a few hours' drive from the capital. From all I've read, it does appear that life is more traditional in that region. This explains a great deal. Alessia is cooking downstairs. Whatever she's making, its savory aroma is enticing. I get up and stretch and head downstairs to see her. She's still dressed in her white top and jeans, and she has her back to me at the stove, mixing something in a pan. My mouth waters. It smells delicious. Hi. I greet her and sit down on one of the bar stools at the counter. Hi. She gives me a quick smile, and I notice she's plaited her hair. I plug my phone into one of the charging sockets beneath the counter and fire up the Sonos. Is there any music you'd like to hear? I ask. You choose. I select a mellow playlist and hit play. Rye X blasts out of the speakers overhead, making us both jump. I turn it down. Sorry about that. What are you cooking? A surprise, she says with a coquettish glance over her shoulder. I love surprises. It smells good. Can I do anything to help? No, this is my thank you. Would you like to drink? I laugh. Yes, I would like a drink. Do you mind that I'm correcting your English? No, I want to learn. Would you like a drink, is what we say. Okay. She flashes me another smile. And yes, I would. Thank you. She sets the pan aside and from the counter takes an open bottle of red wine and pours me a glass. I've been reading about Albania. She whips her eyes to mine, her face lighting up like the early dawn. Home, she whispers. Tell me more about life in Kukës. Maybe it's because she's distracted while cooking supper, But she finally opens up and starts to describe the house she lived in with her father and mother. It's beside a vast lake, surrounded by fir trees, and while she's telling me, I watch and marvel at how she moves about behind the counter, with such ease and grace, as if she's been cooking in this kitchen for years. Whether it's grating nutmeg or adjusting the timing on the oven, she's like a professional. And as she cooks, she tops up my wine, washes dishes, and gives me insights into her claustrophobic life in Kukës. So you don't drive? No, she answers as she lays the table for us. Does your mother drive? Yes, but not often. She smiles when she sees my consternation. You know that most Albanians did not drive until the mid-1990s, before the fall of the communists. We had no cars. Wow, I had no idea. I would like to learn. To drive? I'll teach you. She's taken aback. In your fast car? I do not think so. She laughs as if I've suggested flying to the moon for lunch. I could teach you. We have enough land here. We don't need to be on the public highway. We'll be safe. A vision of her driving one of Kit's cars, maybe his Morgan, comes to mind. Yes, that would be suitable for a countess. Countess? This will take another 15 minutes or so to cook, she says, and she taps her lips with her finger. There's something on her mind. What would you like to do? Alessia chews her bottom lip. What is it? I ask.
I'd like to talk to Magda.
Of course she wants to talk to her. Magda's probably her only bloody friend. Why didn't I think of that? Sure, here. I unplug my phone and find Magda's contact details. When the call connects, I hand the phone to Alessia, who gives me a grateful smile.
Magda? Yes, it's me.
Alessia moves to sit down on the sofa while I try and fail not to eavesdrop. I imagine that Magda is relieved to hear that Alessia is still in one piece.
No, fine.
Alessia glances up at me, her eyes shining.
Very fine,
she says with a wide grin, and I find myself reciprocating. I'll take very fine any day. She laughs at something Magda says, and my heart swells. It's so good to hear her laugh. She doesn't do it often enough. As she talks, I try not to watch her, but I can't resist. Unconsciously, she winds a lock of hair that's escaped from her plait around her fingers as she tells Magda about the sea and her impromptu dip in it yesterday.
No, it's beautiful here. It reminds me of home.
She looks up at me again, and I'm caught in her all-consuming gaze. Home. I could make this her home. My mouth dries. Mate, you are getting way ahead of yourself. I look away, breaking the spell of Alessia's stare. I'm troubled by where my thoughts are heading and take a sip of wine. My reaction is all too new and too presumptuous.
How is Mikhail? And Logan?
She asks, hungry for news, and she's soon lost in a lively conversation about packing and Canada and weddings. Alessia laughs again, and her voice changes, becoming softer, sweeter. She's talking to Mikhail, and I know from her tone that she's exceptionally fond of him. I shouldn't be jealous. He's a kid. But maybe I am. I'm not sure I appreciate this new and unwelcome feeling.
Be good, Mikhail. I miss you. Bye.
She glances at me once more.
Okay, I will. Goodbye, Magda.
She hangs up and wanders back to me to hand me my phone. She looks happy. I'm glad she made the call. All good? I ask.
Yes, thank you.
And with Magda?
She is packing. She's happy and sad to be leaving England, and she is relieved to have the security man near.
Great. She must be excited to start a new life.
She is. Her fiancé is a good man.
What does he do?
Something to do with computers.
I should get you a phone, and then you can speak to her when you want. She looks appalled.
No, no, that is too much. You cannot do that.
I raise a brow, knowing full well that I can. She arches a brow in return, displeased, but I'm saved by the ping of the oven timer. Dinner is cooked.
Alessia places the casserole dish on the table beside the salad she's made. She's pleased that the yogurt crust has risen into a crisp golden brown dome. Maxim is impressed.
It looks good, he says, and Alessia suspects he's being over-effusive. She serves him a portion and sits down.
It is lamb, rice, and yogurt with a few secret, ingredients. We say tavkosi.
We don't bake our yogurt here. We put it on our muesli. She laughs. He takes a bite and closes his eyes as he savors the food.
He opens his eyes and nods enthusiastically. He swallows.
This is delicious. You weren't lying when you said you could cook.
Alessia blushes under his warm gaze.
You can cook for me any time.
I would like that, she murmurs. She would like that very much.
We talk and drink and eat. I ply her with wine and questions, many questions, about her childhood, school, friends, family. Reading about Albania has inspired me. Sitting across from Alessia is inspiring too. She's so full of life. Her eyes are shining and expressive as she talks, and she's animated, using her hands to demonstrate a point. She's captivating. Occasionally, she will tuck that stray strand of hair away, her fingers skimming around the shell of her ear. I'd like her fingers on me. I anticipate unraveling her plait later and running my fingers through her soft, luscious hair. It's heartwarming to see her so carefree and talkative for a change. From the sweet flush on her cheeks, I suspect it might be the wine. I take a sip of the tasty Italian Barolo that's working its magic. Replete, I push my plate away and refill her glass. Tell me about a typical day in Albania.
For me?
Yes.
There is not much to tell. If I am working, my father would drive me to the school, and when I am home, I help my mother. Washing, cleaning, like I do for you.
Espresso eyes peek up, unmasking me with her knowing look. It's sexy as hell.
And that is all I do, she adds.
Sounds rather dull. Too dull for bright Alessia. And I suspect a little lonely.
It is, she laughs.
From what I've read, northern Albania is quite conservative.
Conservative?
She frowns and takes a quick sip of her wine.
Do you mean traditional?
Yes.
Where I am from, we are traditional.
She stands to clear the crockery from the table.
But Albania is changing. In Tirana.
Tirana?
Yes. It's a modern city. It is not so traditional or conservative there.
She puts the plates in the sink. Have you been?
No.
Would you like to go? She takes her seat once more and tilts her head to the side, brushing her index finger across her lips. Her look is wistful for a brief moment.
Yes. One day.
Have you traveled at all?
No. Only in books.
Her smile brightens the room.
I have traveled all over the world in books.
And I've been to America watching TV.
American TV? Yes, Netflix, HBO.
In Albania? She grins at my surprise. Yes, we have television. So, back home, what did you do for kicks? I ask.
Kicks?
Fun, you know, fun. She looks a little puzzled.
I read, watch TV, practice my music. Sometimes I listen to the radio with my mother. The BBC World Service.
Do you go out?
No.
Never.
Sometimes. In the summer we will walk in the town in the evening. But it is with my family. And sometimes I play the piano.
A recital? For the public?
Yes. At the school and weddings.
Your parents must be proud. A shadow crosses her face.
Yes, they were. Are.
She corrects herself, and her voice falters and dips, becoming soft and sad.
My father, he likes the attention.
Her demeanor changes, and she seems to fold in on herself. Shit. You must miss them.
My mother. I miss my mother.
She answers quietly and takes another sip of wine. Not her dad. I don't push her on that. Her mood has shifted. I should change the subject, but if she misses her mother so much, perhaps she wants to return. I remember what she told me.
We thought we were coming here to work, for a better life. Life in Kukes is hard for some women. We were betrayed.
Maybe that's what she wants. To go home. And though I dread what her answer might be, I ask her anyway. Would you like to go back?
Back?
Home. Her eyes widen with fear.
No, I cannot, I cannot.
Her tone is a hushed, rushed whisper, and the fine hairs on my neck stand on end. Why? She remains mute, but I want to know. I press her. Is it because you don't have a passport?
No.
Then why? Was it that bad? She screws her eyes shut and bows her head as if ashamed.
No,
she whispers.
It's because I am betrothed.
Chapter 18. My chest constricts as if I've been kicked in the solar plexus. Betrothed? What medieval claptrap is this? She looks up at me, her eyes wide, exposing her distress. Adrenaline pumps through my body. I'm ready for a fight. Betrothed, I whisper, knowing full well what it means. She's fucking promised to another. She bows her head again.
Yes.
Her voice is barely audible. I have a rival. Shit. And you were going to tell me this when? Her eyes are scrunched shut as if she's in pain. Alessia, look at me. She lifts her hand to her mouth. To suppress a sob? I don't know. She swallows, then raises her eyes to meet mine. Her expression is raw, her despair palpable. My anger dissolves in a second, leaving me in turmoil.
I am telling you now,
she says. She's unavailable. The pain is instant, visceral, shocking. I'm in free fall.
What the hell?
My world has shifted. My ideas, my vague plans, being with her, marrying her. I can't. Do you love him? She draws back and gapes at me in shock.
No!
It's a breathless, passionate denial.
I do not want to marry him. That is why I left Albania.
To get away from him?
Yes, I was to be married in January, after my birthday.
It was her birthday? I stare blankly at her, and suddenly the walls are closing in on me. I need space, like when I first met her. I'm suffocating in a whirlwind of doubt and confusion. I need to think. I stand, and in one deliberate move, raise my hand to sweep my hair aside and gather my thoughts. Alessia recoils beside me. She cowers and clasps her head in her hands as if she's waiting. What? Fuck, Alessia, did you think I was going to hit you? I exclaim and step back, horrified by her reaction. Another piece of the puzzle that is Alessia DiMarchi falls into place. No wonder she always stood out of my reach. And I'm ready to kill the motherfucker. Did he hit you? Did he? She looks down at her lap, ashamed, I think. Or maybe she has some misplaced loyalty to the fucking asshole from buttfuck nowhere who has a spurious claim on my girl. Fucking hell. I clench my fists, my rage murderous. She's so still. Head bowed, folding in on herself. Calm down, mate. Calm yourself. I take a deep cleansing breath, my hands on my hips. I'm sorry. Her head whips up, her look direct and earnest.
You have done nothing wrong.
Even now she's trying to pour oil on my troubled waters. The few steps between us are too great a distance. She watches me warily as I approach, and cautiously I crouch down beside her. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to frighten you. I'm just shocked that somewhere out there you have a suitor, and I have a rival for your affections. She blinks rapidly, and her face softens as a rosy tinge marks her cheeks.
You have no rivals, she whispers.
My breath catches, and warmth spreads in my chest, chasing the last of the adrenaline away. These are the sweetest words that she has said to me. There's hope. This man, he's not your choice.
No, he is my father's choice.
I reach for her hand and bring it to my lips, planting one soft kiss on her knuckles.
I cannot go back, she whispers. I have dishonored my father, and if I return, I will be forced into marriage.
You're betrothed. Do you know him?
Yes.
You don't love him?
No.
Her vehement, monosyllabic response tells me all I need to know. Perhaps he's old, or unattractive, or both. Or he hits her.
Fuck.
Standing, I pull her into my arms, and she comes willingly, putting her hands on my chest. I fold her against my body and hold her. And I don't know if I'm comforting her or myself. The thought of her with someone else, someone who mistreats her, is horrifying. I bury my face in her fragrant hair, grateful that she's here, with me. I'm sorry that you've had to put up with so much shit, I murmur. Looking up at me, she brushes her index finger over my lips.
That is a bad word.
It is. It's a bad word for a bad situation. But you're safe now. I've got you. Leaning down, I brush my lips against hers, and it's like a spark to dry kindling. My body comes alive. It takes my breath away. She closes her eyes and tilts her head back, offering her mouth to me. I cannot resist. In the background, Rai X is still singing in his husky, melancholy falsetto about only falling in love. It's soulful and rousing and relevant. Dance with me. My voice is hoarse. Alessia gasps as I tighten my hold on her and start to sway with her in my arms. She splays her hands on my chest and glides them over my shirt, feeling me, touching me, reassuring me, and curling her fingers around my upper arms as she moves with me, slowly. We shuffle from side to side to the unhurried and seductive rhythm of the ethereal song. Her hands slide up my arms and over my shoulders and into my hair. She nuzzles my chest.
I have never danced like this, she murmurs.
My hand skims down her body to the base of her spine, holding her to me. I've never danced with you. With my other hand, I gently tug on her plait, lifting her lips to mine. I kiss her, long, slow, tasting her, rediscovering her sweet mouth with my tongue while we sway together. I unfasten the elastic, tethering her hair, and slide it off. I groan as she shakes her head, and her hair falls wild and free down her back. Cradling her face, I kiss her again. I want more, so much more. I need to reclaim her. She's with me. Not with some violent bastard from a godforsaken town a world away. Come to bed, I whisper, my voice low.
I have to wash the dishes.
What? Fuck the dishes, baby. Her brow furrows. But no, you don't. Leave them. And the thought pops into my head. If I married her, she'd never have to do another dish again. Make love with me, Alessia. She sucks in a breath, and an inviting, shy smile curls her lips. We flow together. My hands cocoon her head as I move, slowly savoring every delectable inch of her. She is soft and strong and beautiful beneath me. I kiss her, pouring my heart and soul into her mouth. It's never felt like this. Each stroke is bringing me closer to her. Her legs hold me in place, and her hands run over my back, her nails etching her passion on my skin. I lean up and study her dazed face. Her eyes are wide and her pupils the darkest, most carnal espresso. I want to see her, all of her. I stop and press my forehead against hers. I need to see you. I ease out of her and roll us over so that she's on top of me. She's breathless and unsure. With my arm under her behind, I slide her up my body so her legs are on either side of my hips, and I sit up so she's astride me, her arms on my shoulders. I clasp her face and kiss her. Moving my hand down to caress her breast, I deliberately tease her nipple between my thumb and finger as my lips skim from her mouth along her jaw to her throat. She tips her head back and lets out a husky moan of pure pleasure. My erection throbs in response. Yes. Let's try this, I murmur against the fragrant skin of her shoulder. I wrap my arm around her waist and lift her, my eyes on hers as I lower her slowly onto me. Fuck. She's tight and wet and exquisite. Her mouth drops open as she gasps, her eyes large with want. Ah, she breathes, and my lips seize hers, my fingers in her hair as I claim her mouth again. She's panting and gripping my shoulders when I pull back. Okay, I ask. She gives me a frantic shake of her head. Yes, she breathes, and it takes me a moment to realize she's reverted to the Albanian form of yes. I take her hands and lean back until I'm lying on the bed, staring at the woman astride me, the woman I love. Her hair spills down over her shoulders and breasts in a riotous, sensual tumble. She leans forward and spreads her hands on my chest. Yes, touch me. She sweeps her fingers and palms over my skin, feeling me, through my chest hair and over my nipples, which pucker in delight. Ah, I breathe. She bites her lower lip, stifling her wanton, victorious smile. That's right, beautiful. I love your touch. I love you. She leans down and kisses me.
I like touching you,
she says softly, shyly, and my cock strains for more. Take me, I murmur. She pauses, not understanding, and I lift my hips to give her a clue. Alessia cries out, and it's a loud, guttural sound of pleasure that almost pushes me over the edge. She splays her hands on my chest, trying to keep her balance. I grasp her hips. Move. Like this. I hiss through my teeth. I ease her up and back down, and she gasps, but placing her hands on my arms, she rises up and back down. That's it. I close my eyes and enjoy the sensual feel of her. Ah, she calls out. Shit, make this last. She moves, slowly and hesitantly at first, but as her confidence builds, she finds her rhythm. I open my eyes as she rises once more, and this time I flex my hips, meeting her. Her cry is visceral and wakes every sense in my body. Fuck! I grab her hips, moving her faster and faster. She's panting, short, sharp gasps for air. Gripping my arms, her head lolling from side to side with each thrust of mine. Head tipped back, calling to the gods, she's every inch a goddess. Her hold on my arms tightens, and she cries out and stills on top of me as she comes. It's enough to trigger my release, and I cry out, holding her to me as I come and come and come.
Alessia lies in the afterglow of their lovemaking. Maxim has his head on her stomach, his arms around her, as she runs her fingers idly through his hair. She loves the feel of his hair beneath her fingers. Her mother never gave any indication that the sexual act could be so pleasurable. Perhaps that is not the relationship she has with Baba. Alessia frowns. She doesn't want to think about her parents having sex, but her mind wanders, and she remembers her grandmother, Virginia. Now she married for love. They were happy. Even when they were older, her grandparents would exchange looks that made Alessia blush. Her nana's was a marriage that she hoped to emulate.
not her parents' marriage. They were never demonstrative with each other. Maxim never hesitates to hold her hand or kiss her in public, and he talks to her. When has she ever sat for an evening and had a proper conversation with a man? Where she comes from, if a man talks to a woman for any length of time, it is considered by some to be a sign of weakness. She glances at the little light-up dragon on the nightstand, a beacon in the darkness. He bought this for her because he knows she's scared of the dark. He brought her here to protect her. He cooked for her. He bought her clothes. He made love to her. Tears prick the corners of her eyes, and her heart overflows with uncertainty and longing, burning her throat with unspoken emotion. She loves him. Her fingers tighten in his hair as she's overwhelmed by her feelings for him. He wasn't angry with her when she told him she was betrothed. If anything, he was anxious that her heart might belong to another. "Lo, my heart is yours, Maxim." And he was shocked that she thought he might beat her. Her hand goes automatically and instinctively to her cheek. Her father is less of a talker, more of a man of action. She runs her fingers over Maxim's shoulder and traces the outline of his tattoo. She wants to know him better. Perhaps she should ask him more questions. He is evasive about his job. Maybe he has many? She shakes her head. It is not her place to question him. What would her mother say if she did? For now, she will enjoy the little bubble that they share together in Cornwall. Maxim nuzzles her belly and kisses it, distracting Alessia from her unsettling thoughts of home. He looks up at her, his eyes a vibrant emerald in the soft glow from the little dragon. "Stay with me," he says. She smooths his hair off his forehead and frowns. "I am staying with you." "Good," he says, and he kisses her belly again. But this time, his mouth moves lower and lower.
I open my eyes as early morning light seeps through the gaps in the blinds. I'm wrapped around Alessia, my head on her chest, my arm around her waist. The warmth and sweet smell of her skin invades my senses, and my body rises to greet her. Gently, I nuzzle her neck, leaving drowsy kisses at her throat. She rouses, her eyelids fluttering open. "Good morning, princess," I whisper. She smiles, a sleepy, sated look on her face.
"Good morning, Maxim."
Her tone is tender, and I think I hear her love in the way she says my name. Or maybe I'm imagining it because I want to hear it. There, I want her love. All of it. I'm prepared to admit it to myself, but can I admit it to her? The whole day extends before us, open and free, and I'm with her. Let's spend the day in bed. My voice is husky with sleep. Her fingers skim my chin.
"Are you tired?"
I grin. "No."
"Oh,"
she says, and her smile mirrors mine.
His tongue, his mouth, what he does to her. Alessia is lost in a storm of sensation. Her hands tighten on his wrists as she hangs on a precipice. She's close, so close. He teases her again and again with his able tongue and gradually eases a finger inside her, and she falls, her orgasm ripping through her as she cries out. Maxim kisses her belly, her breasts, as he inches up her body and stills above her. "That is a fantastic sound," he whispers, and he rolls on a condom and oh so slowly sinks into her.
When I return from the bathroom, her side of the bed is empty. Oh, the disappointment is real. I'm ready for more. I don't ever think I'll have enough of Alessia. Judging by the grey light seeping into the room, it must be mid-morning, and it's raining. I raise the blinds, and then I hear her, so I scramble back into bed. Crockery rattling, she enters the bedroom. She's wearing my pajama top and carrying breakfast on a tray.